This is From Justin to Kane, a podcast where Mike Robertson and Bob LaRue watch one critically acclaimed film and one terrible film and talk about how they are the same.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to From Justin to Kane. I'm Mike.
And I'm Bob, as always.
As always. And here's a fresh new epi for 2022. Woof, woof, woof. Oh, the canines are barking.
That's right. That's right. Actually, just as a little detour, so my sister and brother-in-law have a 14-week-old puppy.
Yes.
He's a Siberian Husky German Shepherd mix. And he's being afraid of rawhide, which is like a bull's dick. You know, it's like a dog treat, super cheap. It's like dried out like beef jerky. Anyways, he was afraid of it until today, and they gave it to him. And now he's super territorial. He'll be eating it, and he won't let you take it from him. And that's like a fun thing. And that's how I feel like the listeners are of this show. You know, they're loyal. They're territorial. They don't want people to take the show away from them. You know.
Mm-hmm. As a brief detour into puppy corner.
Puppy corner. Hey, puppies are a lot of fun, but boy, are they a lot of work.
A lot of work.
So our new listeners called puppies, and old listeners, like long-time listeners, are called canines. Like, mm-hmm. you're a puppy, and you become a canine.
Aw.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah, first
actually,
time
here's another little detour. When we were at my aunt's house in Lethbridge several years ago, she had a little dog at the time named Mindy.
Mindy.
And Mike had stayed up all night to eat a milkshake with his friend, and he went to bed at like 4 a.m., and then we woke up at like 8:30 to go film an interview.
Mm-hmm.
My aunt made us breakfast at her house, and then Mindy walked by, and then Mike was like in a half asleep phase eating like toast, and he just said quietly, "I didn't know angels flew this low."
Yeah, that's right.
And he meant every word, and it was the cutest thing I've ever heard.
Very cute. Yeah, Mindy was an angel.
Yeah, yeah. She's dead now.
Aw.
Hey, you know what? It happens.
Poor Mindy. May you rest in peace.
What about, so listeners that stop listening to our show because they hate it, do they go to dog heaven? All dogs go to heaven?
Yes.
There's something there. I don't know. There's I'm working on it. I'm spitballing an all dogs go to heaven riff.
Yeah, so this is a new episode of the show. New for 22.
Yeah, we're 2022.
If you don't know what's happening, 2022 is here. It's a new year, new virus. Yeah.
New booster.
New booster. Everybody's got
everything.
New shots.
I texted Mike and I said, this crybaby got his booster shot. And then he just replied with a boss baby meme. Very, yeah. Very topical.
You're a freaking boss baby. re the episode today.
Yes.
As we stated in the intro, the concept of the show is we watch a good movie, watch a bad movie, talk about how they're the same. There's some comedy in that. And the good movie is the Wong Kar-wai masterpiece, Chungking Express.
I think it's good. I don't know if masterpiece is the
word. Oh, I think a lot of people consider it a masterpiece. When I watched it in film school, and I remember it being highly touted, and so I always kind of have that vision of it. But yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe it's not.
I think it's very good, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter. And what's the other film, Mike?
The other film is called Requiem for a Vampire.
Yes.
Or Requiem pour un Vampire, because it is a French film.
Yes,
and
that's
it
came
out in 1971 in France, directed by Jean Rollin.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And people tout this as a masterpiece as well, don't they?
I think if you're into this kind of cult film garbage, like Eurotrash, yes. I guess is what they call it.
I would say this is like a good contender for taking the cake for like the worst Eurotrash out there.
Okay. Well, I've seen a couple of Jean Rollin movies, and
they're all like
this is supposedly one of his most successful, one of his favorite, and.
Yes.
One of his kind of most well-regarded films, but it wasn't the best movie I've seen of his.
Oh, interesting. I did read that it was his most uninhibited film, and therefore he's the most proud of it.
I mean, I would call some scenes uninhibited for sure. There's some like straight up like sexual assault in the movie.
Yeah, multiple times, and for just an excruciating amount of time.
Yeah.
I do want to talk about the opening scene, or yes, part of the opening scene.
My favorite part of the movie is the very, very opening.
I think the first 4 minutes are actually pretty good.
Yes.
Like, I was like, ooh, this has like a Breathless vibe. Like, there's some weird rural driving, and it's very jumpy, and they committed a crime. There's a gun involved.
And they are dressed up as?
Clowns. Clowns.
Yes. Clowns.
yeah, they're dressed as clowns. So it was very, it was very promising, and boy, did it underdeliver. It overpromised, mm-hmm. underdelivered.
Yeah, starts off with a literal bang where there's a clown shooting a gun.
That's right. That's right.
So
that guy that they light on fire in the car.
Yes.
I love it because they're clearly just dumping water on him, and they didn't have a dead body, like a fake dead body. So he's just laying there trying to not breathe, but is breathing.
Yeah.
And that was my favorite part of the film because they burn him because he's dead. They burn him in a car.
As one does.
I also love that they clearly had to pour more gas on the car between shots because the trail of gas goes up to the tire and then it barely catches and then it just kind of fizzles out. And then the next shot is like the reverse, and the entire car is on fire. So there's just some technical dodginess in the movie, which was very fun.
You did text me when you were watching it saying, "What, I hate this movie, or this movie sucks ass," or something like that.
Hey, we can just find out. And then my Letterboxd review was very shitty.
Yes, very shitty. Which was a more depressing watch, Requiem for a Vampire or Requiem for a Dream?
I would say almost identical.
Okay.
Yeah.
Depressing for different reasons.
Yeah, exactly. Turns out there's a huge spectrum of what depressing means, you know? And how to get depressed. And Gene Roland knows what he's doing.
So, yeah, I can get into it a little bit.
Start clooning.
Start clooning, yeah.
Clooning around.
Gene Roland? He's like a French cult film director, a schlockmeister, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Schlock daddy.
He kind of directed a bunch of horror fantasy, also as the French call fantastique, is like a cinematic genre of movies that are like kind of horror fantasy or sci-fi elements.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of like the overlap of those genres. He has worked on films for over 50 years.
Wow.
But his early films are kind of his most prized films. And that includes this movie, Requiem for a Vampire. It also includes Le Viol du Vampire, which is The Rape of the Vampire.
Mm-hmm.
There is Le Vampire Nu, which is the nude vampire.
Mm-hmm. I'm sensing a theme.
Yeah. And Le Frisson de Vampire, or The Shiver of the Vampires.
Ay, ay, ay.
He made some other vampire movies, but, you know, those are the kind of main ones. I have seen The Nude Vampire, this one, and I saw, I believe, Shiver of the Vampires.
You're a real pervert, Mike.
I'm a super pervert.
You really go out of your way to watch this Euro trash perversion.
His early vampire works are kind of his main, like that's where most of his success came from.
Mm-hmm.
But then he also, and like, so he made movies mostly about vampires and other kind of horror type things throughout the 70s. And then he just kind of kept working, doing mostly erotic and borderline pornographic films throughout the 80s and 90s.
Nice.
So
nice.
He ghost directed a Emmanuel movie.
What does that mean?
Emmanuel, I believe, is a erotic film that started in France. It's like a film series. There's like, I don't know, probably 20 of them. But I do remember they'd occasionally pop up on Showcase, which in Canada is like Showtime, I guess, where they would show erotic films at night.
Right, right.
So on television, so.
Your favorite time of the day was erotic o'clock, right? probably 11 p.m. or something.
Yeah, definitely at erotic o'clock. It was the best time.
Dirty little Mikey up in northern Alberta watching dirty movies on cable around 11 p.m.
Anyway, yes.
Don't change the subject. Just kidding, you can. What else? What else, Mike?
Yeah, so he had made some erotic films throughout the 80s and 90s, and then he returned to some vampire movies later in his career.
What does that say about a guy?
He just kind of does what works.
Do what you know. Vampire.
But he did direct some porn movies at a certain point, or French erotic porn movies.
Right.
X-rated movies, I guess. Maybe not triple X. Who knows?
Are there any part of your private collection, Mike? You have a coveted, you know, Super 8, Super 16 porno collection. Do you have any of his entries?
Honestly, I don't know.
Your catalog is too vast.
It's too vast, so I actually probably don't even know if I have it.
Yeah.
So anyway, after he made a couple of movies, he started kind of not having success throughout the 70s. And so he straight up would make adult sex films. He had like a couple of commercial failures, one after the other. Le Rose de Fer and Le Rose de Sang, whatever that means in French. Bob, you have a French last name. What does all that mean?
I don't know, man. Ask Google.
He made a porn movie called Phantasms, Once Upon a Virgin.
Wow.
Which we can add to our Once Upon a Time in.
Oh, yes. Once Upon a Virgin. Wow. What an entry. Oh, my goodness.
So he made a bunch of, porn movies, which under different pseudonyms. Michelle Gentil was one of them, including me, one called Suck Me Vampire or Suce Moi Vampire.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
Yeah. But he did make Phantasms or Once Upon a Virgin as a porn movie that was credited to him. So that was the only one credited to him as John Rowland. So he's a very prolific guy. He's made many, many, many movies.
I would say this without being a little jokester. He has a very impressive body of work.
He does, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he really committed to it for
his
life.
And the movies, his vampire movies, it's like he kind of came into a format, really.
It's like literally the same thing George Lucas did.
I've seen a couple of his other ones, and they all have the same format of people go to a castle. They are surprised to find vampires there.
Yes.
And then they deal with the vampires.
In a sexual way.
In a sexual way. The nude vampire, surprisingly and somewhat ironically, has the least amount of nudity and the least amount of like sex stuff. So it's called the nude vampire, but really it's about a cult that worships this vampire lady who is the titular nude vampire.
So she's nude, no one else is.
Well, she's only nude every once in a while. It's not enough to warrant the title, I would say.
Interesting, interesting. I think we should just take a quick moment to I have a hunch literally no one is going to watch this film, but there is a scene where a woman is tied up to this like brick wall in the basement of a castle.
Yes.
She's naked. This vampire has sex with her, turns into a bat, and then performs cunnilingus as a little bat.
That is, yes. And that is an iconic scene that I figured we would discuss.
okay, good.
But go on.
It's the most noteworthy part of the film, I think. It's insane. Doesn't make any sense. And I just love the idea of the people there on the day actually shooting the scene.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was fun. It's fun that they were like, we're going to film this vampire orgy. But also, logically, one of them would turn into a bat at one point. So we have to do a scene where it seemed as if this woman was having sex with a bat. And also, all of the vampire men, or all of the vampires in the movie are men, pretty much, with the exception of like one or two, I think. The vampire
just one.
Ladies. Yeah. And then they're all just kind of like, they just kind of almost seem like, you know, crew members who they're just like, you're a vampire now. I don't think that was what happened, but they just kind of don't come off as vampires
actors
in the classic kind of sexy sense.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I will say this. A lot of those vampires were not sexy.
No.
Including the main guy, the ailing one. You know, the one who was going to, you know, die.
Yeah, the old guy.
Just old, lanky, and gross.
He's in all of the other movies I saw by John Rowland.
Oh, really? Is he John Rowland?
No.
Oh, okay.
He is not. And he does play the same kind of similar kind of old guy who kind of lords Lanky over creep. Everybody else.
Yeah.
Kind of character.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Hey, if you got a trick, keep doing it for money.
And there's a similarity right there. Directors using cast members.
Over and over.
Over and over again, because Wong Kar-wai and Tony Leung worked together a couple times.
That's right. More than a couple times.
More than a couple times.
I think they worked together 6 times.
Did he work with Maggie Cheung a couple of times?
I think just the once.
That's her name, right? From In the Mood for Love.
Yeah. Yes. I think it was just the one time.
Yeah. This is our second Wong Kar-wai film.
That's right. That's right. It's the third one I've seen, but the second one for the pod. I mean, Wong Kar-wai, great, great, cool, cool dude.
Yeah. I've seen maybe...
Makes cool movies.
I saw, I think, 4 or 5 of them because I watched... When his box set came out last year, they commemorated it at our local movie theater. You could rent them all for like, I think $50. You could rent the entire box set at once and stream it. But I didn't get through all of them.
Now they're all on Crave.
Now they're all on Crave. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah. There you go.
I'm going to watch Fallen Angels next.
I think I saw that one and I thought it was boring.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to say this with the utmost respect. They're all kind of boring.
They all are kind of boring, yeah.
Like, I mean, Chungking Express, it's like, it was a cool movie. I was kind of bored.
I agree, actually. I think, actually, In the Mood for Love is the most consistently non-boring.
I would say it's the best movie, and it's the easiest one to watch with, like, a Western temperament.
Yeah.
You know? Because I'm so used to Marvel movies and Star Wars and nude vampires. It's interesting to watch the pacing of a Wong Kar-wai film, you know?
So this episode of the podcast, I mean, I don't want to say it doesn't get more obscure than this, but the likelihood that people have seen both of these movies is like, almost. You got to be a real cinephile. This is an episode for the cinephile canines, I think.
Yeah, I think this is going to definitely alienate some listeners.
Yeah, but also Requiem for a Vampire is, you know, nudity filled and cult movie adjacent.
I'll say this about
some people would have seen it, and also that it has appeal beyond just kind of if you're a cinephile who just wants to see everything.
That's true. I'm gonna say this about the nudity. It is so unerotic.
Yes.
Like nothing. You're watching it. You're like, wow, I don't feel anything. This is just extremely boring.
I don't feel anything.
Yeah.
As in, you're just like looking down at Lil Bob and being like, I don't feel anything.
My pee-pee's not moving from this 1971 horror porno.
I mean, yeah. For it, what was Andy Sidaris was the director of?
Hot Ticket to Hawaii.
Hot Ticket to Hawaii. Yeah, that was another movie that was like filled with nudity, but then also
nothing.
There was something kind of like almost
clinical
about it, yeah. And I don't want to say that the nudity in this movie was clinical, but it did feel like it was excessive to the point of almost being boring.
Yeah, it just, it was like contextless trash.
Yeah.
So, just really nothing, you know?
Yeah.
Even if you're a horny dude, nothing.
So, some facts about this film.
Yes?
Yeah, so this is John Roland's favorite movie that he's made.
Mm-hmm.
The main cast member, Mary Pierre Castel. She has a twin.
Oh, wow.
And her sister is Catherine Castel. So they have appeared together in The Nude Vampire, which is another movie that I saw. So they were both in that. And I was surprised to learn when I saw that she had a twin sister. So I was like, what? There's two of them and they look exactly the same?
That's not twin. Special effects. It's the real deal.
Yeah.
And they're both actors. That's so weird.
She also was in some of his erotic movies as well. So she kind of just went over to the porny side with him.
Right, right. Weird.
Catherine Castell was supposed to be in it, but she was busy for some reason. So Mary Pierre Castell was in it instead.
Hmm.
But they have appeared together as twins a few times.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mary Pierre quit acting in 1977, so a little fun fact about her. So anyway, it's interesting she's got a twin sister, and that Roland wanted the other one for this, but then had to settle for this twin. So a lot of his vampire movies have castles in them. Basically, yes. A bunch of characters go to a castle, are surprised to learn that vampires live there, and just are like dealing with the vampires. So for all of these movies, hilariously, Gene Roland would rent the castle from some rich person, mm-hmm. or like a historical place, get in trouble because they damaged it. Because I think in this movie they throw paint on the side of it at one point,
right?
Like, or blood.
Yeah.
And
it's called burning a location.
Yeah, and in another, I can't remember which one it was. I think it might be the nude vampire. There's another scene where it's clear that they damaged the castle, like in the movie.
Yeah.
And then so this movie was filmed in two different castles because they got kicked out of one of them. Which is like a
Christ.
Huge thing to happen to you. Just like you get kicked out.
Yeah, we lost our castle, guys. Now what?
But also, he really was more interested in the dungeons than the castle's parts themselves, because so much of the movie is spent in these kind of dank dungeons where people are just having weird sex.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I just thought it was funny that on multiple occasions he was kicked out of castles for wrecking them.
I'm just going to say it right here, right now. That's legendary.
It is kind of legendary, yeah.
Real legendary behavior.
He's a genius.
yes he is.
Also, these movies, all of his vampire movies, cost like nothing.
How much?
Well, I don't know what the budget is, but I just have read online, you know, I'm just taking this from what I researched. A lot of these movies were like ultra low budget.
Interesting. That doesn't surprise me.
Also, there's barely any dialogue in the first like hour of the film. I don't know if you noticed that.
I'm just going to be totally forthright with you. I was so unimpressed with the film. I was watching YouTube videos at the same time as watching this film just to make the time pass quicker.
Yeah. And did it work?
And I kept thinking to myself, I'm like, wow, I'm not hearing any talking yet.
Ah.
It's crazy. So I got to listen. I'd listen to like a YouTube video and watch the movie or vice versa.
Well,
real half-assed way to watch a movie, but I don't regret it.
I mean, I guess it is a bad movie. So, you know, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah. Well, and it didn't cross my mind to just skip the sex scenes.
It didn't cross your mind to skip them?
I don't know why. They were super boring and long, and I was just like, ugh, got to sit through this, don't I?
Yeah, it literally, nothing really happens except people just kind of paw at each other while kind of crappy music plays in the background.
A lot of snare drum in this movie. Yeah. Just really intense snare drum playing. Anyways, continue.
So this wasn't the only movie where he would hire a like rock musician
mm-hmm.
to like make the music. The Nude Vampire, I think, was another one where like, he hired some band to do it. And so the music seems like almost central to the movie, but also in that it's kind of like, it really sticks out as being kind of like really rock and roll. It's like when you watch those Giallo films.
Yes.
You know, they'd get like
Italian
Goblin.
Horror.
They get Goblin to like make music, and the music is like awesome in it.
Yeah.
Kind of has a similar feeling with this movie or with these movies, except the music almost seems improvised half the time.
But not like jazz improvised, just like bad.
It just seems like they were kind of noodling around. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty wild stuff.
And don't get us wrong. We love a good noodle sesh, but.
You love a good noodle sesh.
Oh, I love noodle seshes, yeah.
The scene at the very end of the movie where they are whipping that lady, they filmed it a couple of different ways. This multiple scenes in the movie were filmed this way, where they would have it being, the character was like wearing clothes, and then other scenes where they're naked. So they just were doing it for distribution in like other countries.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because they were broadcasting them on TV or something. I don't know, but they had to shoot scenes multiple ways. So there's a less, sexy, we'll say, version of the movie floating mm-hmm. around out there.
I would, you know, it's funny. This film is not sexy in the slightest, but it tried so hard to be.
It did try, yes. It did try very hard.
It's better to have tried and failed than to never have tried at all. Gene Roland, 1971.
Brilliant.
You miss 100% of the nude films you don't shoot, Wayne Gretzky.
Anyway, Jean Roland, you know, he's a prolific director. He makes cult movies. I think he's kind of taken on a retroactive appreciation. I think a lot of people have for him now. I don't think he had like huge quantities of success throughout his career, just kind of going in and out of making like decent sized hits to making porn, depending on what was going on.
Yes.
He did kind of legitimize at least in France, you know, erotic film or porn actors working in regular movies, I guess if you can call them that.
Mm-hmm.
So he did kind of, I guess, normalize that, which I guess is good. Just seeing people who in porn,
great.
Like, oh, this person might be a good actor. And then they actually are able to pull off these like pretty, you know, low budget kind of crappy movies. So good
mm-hmm.
for him.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
And yeah, John Rowland, he's a guy.
Another similarity right there. Both film directors, just guys doing guy stuff.
Totally just guys. You know?
Yeah. Oh, we're just some guys doing guy stuff.
Yeah, his last movie was in 2009. So he worked for 30 years. I would be surprised if he wasn't. He died actually 2010. So he died a year after he made his last film. So there you go.
Interesting. I guess he made films right to the end. That's good.
Yeah.
That is a good life, you know? Like, there's nothing to complain about there.
No, not really, no. Yeah, he's he definitely made a bunch of wild movies that I think appeal to a very specific kind of film fan.
Like us? A couple of dirty pervs.
A couple of dirty pervs, yeah. And on his website, you can buy all of his movies on DVD.
Beta tape.
Yeah. But then you can also buy a John Rowland bobblehead.
Ooh, I'm going to get that for your birthday.
Thank you. They re-released a bunch of his movies on these deluxe box sets like 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
On DVD and Blu-ray. And they're like, I've held one of them in my hand and they are fancy. They're like big, thick. It's like almost Criterion level of care.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of weird considering how kind of it's trashy these movies are, but well, you know, people like a nice box set sometimes.
That's true. That's true.
So anyway, we watched this movie, on the library website. We watched on the Hoopla app.
Yes. I didn't remember my library pin, so I used Mike's account, and it was awesome.
A little behind the scenes.
Yeah, a little just talking, showing you how the sausage gets made a little bit. Okay, Chungking Express was released in 1994, written and directed by Wong Kar-wai. It's a film consisting of two love stories. I had no idea. I had seen a lot of imagery from the film, but then when it started playing... And I was like watching it. I was like, what the fuck? And then it like split into a new story. And I was like, what is this movie? I had no idea. I was sort of blindsided that it was sort of vignette-y. But only two.
Only two vignettes.
Interestingly, there was a third story. And that is the story that ended up getting used for Fallen Angels, the film you thought was quite boring.
Yeah. Is Fallen Angels like it's a cop movie, I think, too?
Because he's all a hitman, right?
Yeah.
And so the third story is supposed to be about like a lovelorn, is that the phrase? Lovelorn hitman? Whatever, it doesn't matter. But then it didn't happen because Wong Kar-wai thought like the two stories was enough and that the movie would be too long for international distribution and stuff. So they made the film during a 2-month break from his film Ashes of Time, which is like this crazy epic movie that he was making. And this film was the antithesis of it. It was written and shot in 2 months.
Right, right.
He basically wrote it and directed it at the same time. But the second story he wrote in a day, which is cool, over the New Year's break. Tony Leung's apartment in the story is actually the cinematographer's apartment, Christopher Doyle, who's an Australian cinematographer who moved to Hong Kong and has shot a bunch of very famous movies, including In the Mood for Love.
Right, right, right.
But that's his apartment. That's all his furniture. They just went in there and shot in there, which I think is awesome.
Why did he move there?
I have no idea. I saw an interview and I think they asked him and he was just like, oh, like Australia wasn't for me. Like he just had some wanderlust.
Yeah. And I guess Australia is kind of close to Asia.
It is. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it's not like a crazy move, you know?
No.
Bridget Lynn, who plays the woman in the blonde wig. So I read two things. She came out of retirement to work with this movie, but also the reason she was in that costume and had the wig on and the sunglasses and all the scenes was because she was shooting another movie simultaneously. And they didn't have enough time for her to go through hair, makeup, and wardrobe. Mm-hmm. So they would just put that on her to save time.
Oh, interesting.
And I don't know what's true, but I think both of those are interesting. So just kind of a neat little behind-the-scenes thing.
That is cool. Yeah, that's kind of fun that they just made do with what they had.
Yeah, well, that's why these movies are so cool, because they're really scrappy. Like, they have almost no lights. They're shooting everything on location. And they're really leaning into what the world gives them, and I admire that. I love movies.
And when
you
say these movies, you're talking about Chungking Express and Requiem for a Vampire, right?
Precisely. Yeah, yeah. They have a shared quality about them and how they were made. They're both extremely low budget, super quick shoots.
That is a similarity right there, yeah.
Yeah, Chungking Express was shot in 23 days, and it was being written and shot pretty much at the same time.
And it was while he was making another movie.
Yeah, he was either shooting or he was in editing, and they had a 2-month hiatus for some reason, and so he made this movie because he owed 2 movies.
Right, right.
And this was his way of just banging it out real quick. It's similar to Luc Besson. Who's the guy who made Leon the Professional and The Fifth Element?
Yeah, Luc Besson.
Besson. He made Leon the Professional during pre-production of The Fifth Element. And then that film ended up being way more successful than The Fifth Element, which I think is hilarious. And this is a similar situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. The title is a mix of two famous Hong Kong landmarks, Chungking Mansion, which is a giant hostel occupied by many people, and then Midnight Express, which is like an Indian food store.
Right, right, right.
And so it's two landmarks, and the reason he chose those two locations was because they had never been in movies before. So he wanted to like use them himself. This film has two cinematographers. Andrew Lau shot the first segment. He also shot Wong Kar-wai's first film, As Tears Go By, I think is what it's called. And then Christopher Doyle shot the second portion and most of Wong Kar-wai's subsequent films.
Right, right, right.
But he also shot his second movie, so there's like a weird meta ordering there of DPs. And the last thing is California Dreamin', played, which is by Mamas and the Papas, is played 6 times in like 45 minutes.
Right, right, right.
It was almost too often.
But also, my hot take about this movie is, I mean, I think it's good. I think what people like about it is they're charmed by the romance.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely.
The reason I think a lot of people love this movie is because the woman who plays that song all the time, Fei Wong.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she, with her like short haircut and like the shirt she wears.
Yeah.
And her just always playing that song. There's just something kind of like iconic about that instantly.
Mm-hmm.
Just like that character and what she brings to the movie. I think most people were kind of just overly charmed by that character and her storyline.
Yeah.
Because like whenever I think of Chungking Express, that's all I think about. I don't ever think about the other storyline. I actually kind of find the other storyline kind of boring.
I think the first storyline just gets in the way of the movie.
Yeah, it is kind of boring.
Because 2/3 of the movie are the second storyline.
Right. And I think it was because it was just kind of like squeezed in there just to make the movie longer.
Yeah, I agree with you. And she's so cute and charming in how she like cleans his place and is just like there and like living there without him knowing.
Yeah, they should have just stretched that storyline out.
Yeah, I agree.
But also that actor is a famous pop star, or was.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she was a pop star in the like 90s.
Oh, shit. Interesting. So I think,
yeah, I mean, I don't know how successful it was at the time, but I feel like the international success of it, I think my hot take is that it rides almost entirely on the back of that one actor and the scenes she's in.
Totally. So apparently Quentin Tarantino went to, I forget the studio, it's not Disney, it's not, maybe it's Miramax or a studio slightly larger. He went and asked for funding to start a distribution company just because of this film, because he wanted it to be seen by more people.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like it's a real, like, people who make movies love this movie. And Barry Jenkins loves this movie, and it was like his big inspiration to be like, oh, I can make my kind of movie because this movie exists.
Yeah. But also, Quentin saw this movie and you wanted to bring it to America because there's just so many feet close-ups in this film. So
that's true. Guy loves feet. Guy loves feet.
He really does.
That's pretty much all I have about Chungking Express. You know, just rocking it, trying to keep it pretty succinct, you know? I guess the last thing is, so he had the like, Wong Kar-wai doesn't use traditional screenplays. He doesn't really write dialogue out. He just writes out moments.
Yeah.
And then They just kind of figured out on the day. So he would write lines and stuff the night before of different scenarios, which is kind of a fun, stressful way to make a movie.
Well, I mean, almost an improvised quality to it.
Yeah, totally. And it feels that way.
Yeah. And one could say there's an improvised quality to the films of Gene Roland.
I agree. Hey, that's a similarity right there. What the hell?
I mean, this is a good time to get into the similarities then, or samesies as we've been calling them recently.
Samesies. A samesies sandwich.
Yeah.
Is so when you say a samesie and I get on that samesie and then you get on the samesie that I had.
Yes, yes.
So it's a samesie sandwich. Maybe we'll do that today. I don't know.
It's a samewich. Well, let's talk samesies then.
Great. Welcome to the samesies corner,
canines. Samesies corner, yeah. Samesies.
If you have any samesies, you just feel free to email us. You know, it's never too late.
If you watched the relatively obscure Gene Roland Requiem for a Vampire from 1971.
Extremely obscure.
I mean, it was streaming on Netflix at some point.
Was it?
Yeah. Like, these movies are not obscure. Like, you can find these movies. Like, I mean, they had it on the library website.
They got some weird shit on there, man.
Yeah, I know, but it's like
the library gets their dirty little hands on some weird shit.
Yeah, but I would say that there must be some historic significance to this that they would feel like it was worth exposing people to.
En français, yeah, that's right.
Maybe it's just because it's in French, but I think it's because I think there is some, like, maybe it's all the nudity that it's like, oh, this is art. Who knows? Anyway, let's talk samesies.
Both films have non-English titles, but we know them better by their English titles.
Oh, okay. What's the non-English title of Chungking Express again?
It translates to Chungking Forest, but I forget what it... Chungking Sam Lam. Mm-hmm. Yes, which means like Chungking Forest.
Right.
Which is cool. Yeah.
Great. Both movies have large swaths of the film where there's no dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For example, most of Requiem for a Vampire, there's no talking.
It's like 12 lines of dialogue in the whole fucking thing.
It seems like that, yeah. And there is a lot of talking in Chungking Express, but there's also large chunks where no characters talking or just like running, and then the slow motion is really kind of like jittery.
Step frame,
yeah.
Both films are very heavy into their genre. Like, they're very much genre films, yes, I think. Yes. But they're like, yeah, I don't know. It's just like a classic sort of horror movie, but then it turns... No, I think what I should say is they're both interpretations of genres.
Right.
Like, non-Hollywood interpretations, because Requiem for a Vampire is a horror film, but it doesn't really feel like one. It doesn't behave like one.
No.
And it's sort of its own beast, and I think... Chungking Express has the same vibe of like, oh, this is like a rom-com. It's like a light and easy movie, but it's at the same time, it doesn't feel like you're watching The Proposal with Sandra Bullock and Ryan Reynolds. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Both movies feature the mamas and the papas prominently.
That's right.
That I mean the mamas and the papas. The song California Dreamin' is in Chungking Express quite a bit. And in Requiem for a Vampire, there is a mama vampire and a papa vampire.
That's right.
So there is mamas and papas.
Yeah. Both films feature warm weather.
Sure.
So many characters are like sweating or they're just in like light clothing in Chungking Express because of the climate. Mm-hmm. Very warm and humid. And one can only assume it is quite warm when they shot... Requiem for a Vampire, as there is a ton of nudity in places that otherwise should be very cold.
Yes.
AKA the basement of a castle or just a farm field. And everyone seems to be pretty comfortable.
They seem pretty chill, yeah. In both movies, a character sleeps in somebody's bed.
Ah.
You know what
I mean? Naughty boy. That's a good one. Of course you realize that.
So in Chungking Express... Fei Wong's character sleeps in that guy's bed. She's like,
yeah.
Breaks into his house and cleans his room and like sleeps in his bed.
Yeah, because she gets a key from his ex-lover.
Yeah,
in that note that she leaves because she's an airline.
That's right,
lady. Yeah,
And then in Requiem for a Vampire, like the two main character ladies, they stumble into this castle. Are like, all right, let's just go in, and Then they find a bed and like, all right, you know what? Let's just get naked and sleep in this bed.
Mm-hmm.
And then they do. As one does when you're in a weird castle in the middle of nowhere.
Well, you and I have done that a bunch, haven't we?
But it is interesting that they're like, oh, we might be vulnerable. But yet they're like, gotta sleep naked. It's just how I sleep.
It's what Gene wants. We'll just do whatever Gene wants.
I mean, that's what the director's job is, I guess. Tell people what to do.
Both movies feature little toy things that should be able to fly but aren't, but can't because they're toys.
Go on.
Okay. So we have the little airplane that mm-hmm. Faye is playing with in Tony Leung's apartment.
That's right. Yeah.
It's that classic handheld sequence with the airplane. It's quite famous. While California Dreamin' is playing.
Of course
and
it is.
And there's the classic shot of the little toy bat sitting on that lady's bush as if it's performing cunnilingus. And that's clearly just a toy bat. Not real. Can't fly. But it seems like it can.
You know what, Bob? That is a very good samesy.
It was solid. It was a solid samesy.
It was what amongst your best.
Italian best chef work. Kiss. We should do a top, like, this would be way too much work, but a top 10 samesies that we've each done.
Yeah. Oh, and that'd be really
like all the insane bullshit that we've ever said about two movies.
We're finding similarities between movies where it doesn't matter if they're the same, like, who cares, you know?
Yeah.
And we're doing that. Exactly. We're doing that work and we're getting awarded for it.
Yeah, it's true. We finally got sponsored by Bubbly.
Finally.
Just kidding. We're still waiting, Bubbly. We're still waiting. We keep refreshing our inbox. Nothing.
Bob even wrote out the copy. Like, he wrote just like, if you're a canine and you're out there, you know, walking around, taking dumps on someone's lawn, barking at other dogs, you need a water that quenches your thirst.
Put it in your water dish and lap it up, scooping with your tongue, because you're just a dirty dog.
This is some iconic copy that Bob has wrote. And we can't use it because, I mean, we haven't officially gotten the sponsorship yet.
That's right. We're not going to do it for free. We're not fucking, you know, we're good businessmen. We're waiting for that golden bubbly train.
I mean, we're not doing that for free. We're doing the podcast for free. You know, we're putting all this work in for free.
Yeah.
But we're still good businessmen. Okay. Don't forget.
That's right. That's right.
Here's another samesy coming at you.
Hot and ready.
Two costumed women looking for love. In both movies.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, Faye Wong's character isn't really wearing a costume, although she's wearing a uniform. She has to dress up. She has to wear like an apron and stuff at work.
What about this, Mike? Bridget Lynn is literally in a costume. She's in a blonde wig.
Well, that's sunglasses. What I'm saying. She's wearing a wig and sunglasses.
Yes.
But Faye Wong's character isn't. Yeah, well, exactly. So she's wearing a costume. Faye Wong's character's kind of wearing a uniform.
Faye Wong isn't really, but close enough.
It's close enough. And also, I mean, in Requiem for a Vampire, at the first you're like, why are these two clowns involved in this, drive-by gunfight?
Mm-hmm.
And then
clowns.
These two clowns, yeah, because they're French. and later in the movie, there is like a scene where there's a big exposition dump.
Yeah.
And you learn
huge dump.
A huge dump, yeah.
Massive exposition dump all over my front lawn, making the grass turn green or yellow. It's terrible.
And we learned that they were clowns. They were at a New Year's party, I guess.
And then they shot a guy, and then the guy they were with got shot.
Yeah, but they're wearing costumes, but they're doing it at a job, so it's technically a uniform in some way.
That's right. That's so right.
It's yes, like the intersection of costume and uniform is at play in both films. Mm-hmm. And there are two women who are wearing these things and they are looking for love throughout the movie because in Requiem for a Vampire, I was going to say a dream, but Requiem for a Vampire, they are, they just kind of like hook up with random vampire dudes who mm-hmm. seduce them and are like, maybe I like this guy. And one of the relationships goes well and the other one kind of doesn't. So that's another samesy between the two movies.
Absolutely. So, absolutely.
So they're pretty much the same movie, you could say.
Yeah. They're both just kind of plotless.
Yes.
Like, just boring, avant-garde, plotless, art house movies.
Mm-hmm.
That's just, that's a similarity.
It's like they appeal to cinephiles, but in different ways for the same reason. You know, like they're kind of plotless, kind of meandering. Mm-hmm. But like cinephiles will be like, Chungking Express is a brilliant movie because of its like avant-garde approach to storytelling. And other cinephiles will be like, Requiem for a Vampire is Eurotrash genius because of its avant-garde approach to storytelling.
Yeah, exactly.
So people will justify that these are great things for the same reason, but they are also, by our estimation and by the estimation of many critics, one of them is bad and one of them is good.
Yes. I mean, objectively, that's true.
Objectively, that is true about both of these films.
And subjectively, it's true, but you also just love it. You love to hate it. You love to love it, you know?
Yeah, you do. You love to hate it and you love to love.
Mm-hmm.
Live, laugh, love?
Live, laugh, roof. For all the canines.
That is a shirt idea. Get that in. Put it in the shirt bin of like merch ideas.
That's live, right. Laugh, live, laugh, roof. Yeah. That's good.
Great stuff.
I like that.
So Chungking is a mansion, you say?
Yes. Well, it's a mansion, but it's like a hostel. You can just rent rooms.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is a mansion.
Castle.
It's a mansion that you can kind of rent. And yeah, similarly, it is like a castle in some ways.
Urban castle.
It's like an urban castle. Good, good, good. Same with in Requiem for a Vampire. Yeah, they're in a friggin' castle. And they're kind of trapped there. There's like almost kind of a, when they leave, they go down the path and then they're back at the castle. Do you remember that?
Yes. Yeah. Just like the scene from Coraline.
Yeah. Does that happen in Chungking Express? Not necessarily that someone leaves and then manages to find their way back, but that they're almost are feeling trapped in this kind of, I don't know.
It seems
like they're kind of trapped in this airport.
Well, yeah. And like Tony Leung can't leave.
Yeah.
And they keep shooting like the same locations over and over again. So yeah, that's kind of the same vibe.
Yeah, it does kind of have the same kind of trapped in a castle or something kind of vibe to it.
Mm-hmm. Both films feature ladies shooting a gun very abruptly, kind of in the first third of the movie.
Because
Bridget, she shoots a gun. She shoots that drug lord.
Yeah.
In the gut after she falls in love, and the two Clunes shoot a gun.
Yeah.
Murder.
Yeah, there's women on the run with guns.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, if I'm being honest, that's my last good one.
So yeah, that's the samesies for both of these movies. We kind of discovered that, you know, with about 6 to 10 samesies, that they're identical films, pretty much. What were your thoughts on both of these movies, Bob?
I thought Chungking Express, slightly overrated, still enjoyed it. I thought the imagery is very beautiful. And then I absolutely loathed watching Requiem for a Vampire. And I hope I never see another Gene Roland film as long as I live.
Okay, well, that's too bad because that's what we're doing next week. So begins Roland Fest.
Ah, Christ.
On the From Justin to Kane podcast.
The biggest corner there ever was. How about you? What do you how do you feel about these movies?
Chungking Express. I remember liking it when I saw it in film school, and then I watched it again during that Wong Kar Wai festival thing they did last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I still think In the Mood for Love is a superior film,
mm-hmm.
but I did enjoy this movie way more. It's just a kind of interesting and charming film. I'd say the charm of the movie is like very high for this film, which is, I think, why so many people like it, as I mentioned.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think it ages well.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I figured that you would just love this movie. I thought that you'd just be head over heels for it.
Because I just think it's like it's coveted in a way that maybe it shouldn't be.
Yeah. I just figured you'd love it because of the romance and Christopher Doyle, I guess.
Those certainly don't hurt. No. But, you know, I can see past Christopher Doyle and love and be like, this is fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Requiem for a Vampire. I thought it was fine for what it was. It was actually way better than I was expecting it to be. I thought it was going to be complete garbage.
Yeah.
But it was actually fairly well made considering, and I did enjoy mostly the first half.
Mm-hmm.
And then once...
Do you wish there was more clooning?
I wish that they would have been in cloon costumes the whole time.
Me too. Actually, that would have been amazing.
They should have just called it Cloon Vampire. Or Le Vampire de Cloon.
Yeah, I agree.
Les Gloon Vampires. Anyway, it was fine. He has other movies that are better. I think The Nude Vampire of the three that I saw was probably the best one. Mm. And Shiver of the Vampire, I cannot even remember a single scene from that film.
Mm.
So...
Well, that's heartbreaking because we have Gene Roland on the phone. He heard everything you just said, and he is upset. Oh, my God. Only I can hear his tears right now, but he is peeved.
And you are talking to him from heaven, I assume? Like you are a medium of some kind?
Yeah. I got a nifty new... That new iPhone 16, you can call dead people.
You've seen The Sixth Sense where you can see dead people? Well, guess what? This phone?
Now
you can hear dead people.
Text them. SMS.
Yeah.
Send message suddenly to the afterlife.
I SMS dead people. That movie wouldn't have gone over as well. It's like, hey, we got an update for The Sixth Sense for 2022. It's like you're texting with ghosts. I SMS dead people.
Mm-hmm.
Would that go over really well? Would people love that? They'd be like,
the 780 sense.
Yeah. Ooh. That's,
how's that?
Nobody's going to laugh at that unless they live in that area code, which is our area code.
Yes, but not the whole city. There's a bunch of 587s too.
587 represent.
You're a 587?
Yeah, what would you give this in terms of star rating, both of these films?
4 milk bones to Chungking Express, half a milk bone to Requiem de la Vampire Clune.
So you said Requiem de la...
Yeah, yes, I did.
Isn't that, what does that mean in French? Does it mean, that doesn't mean of the.
No, it doesn't. It's wrong. I just said it. Don't.
Because it's Requiem for a vampire. Pour un vampire.
Pour un vampire de Clune.
Okay, yeah, I would say Chungking Express. I agree. It's like a solid 4 milk bones for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Requiem pour un vampire. I don't know. Maybe like a soft... 1.5, 2.
Like you dipped them in water and then you just put them on the floor.
Yeah.
For a dog with no teeth so they can just kind of get up, you know?
Sad. Yeah, real. Yeah. That's a real soft 2 milk bones for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Real wet, real dipped in water. You know?
Waterlogged milk bones. I'll give it 2 waterlogged.
You leave milk and cookies for Santa and you leave milk bones dipped in water for your toothless, aged dog.
Oh, God. This is getting depressing.
Hey, man. That's life, brother. That's life.
It is life. It is life. Okay, well, that was a good epi, I think. A good new epi for the new year.
Yeah. Strong epi.
Strong one,
This feels over.
Okay, that's what I was waiting for. Eventually, we're just a cliche where we just are like, we got to say this catchphrase at this point in the thing.
Will the show just evolve into just catchphrase after catchphrase, like just cliche after cliche, and there's actually nothing new?
Yeah.
It's just an echo chamber of what we've already done, like a Marvel movie.
But podcasts, I think, are comfort food for some people, right?
That's right.
So
yeah, like a wet milk bone.
Yeah, exactly. So I think even like murder podcasts, I think people will find something oddly comforting about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think, yeah, people having catchphrases in podcasts is a very... important part of the podcasting genre. It's a good we got canines, we got this feels over, we got our catchphrases. I mean, we're a real podcast.
Yeah, we're really doing it, Mike.
Yeah, we're really doing it.
New year, not a new podcast.
Nope,
everything's same the one. Same.
Yeah, so next week we're gonna not talk about movies, and instead we're gonna just take a brief detour to talk about video games for an episode. We return to From Justin to Game format, where we talk about video games instead of movies for an episode.
That's right. And what are the two games there, Mikey?
We are going to talk about Mario 64,
mm-hmm.
which Bob has been playing intermittently for the last however many years.
Like 2 years, basically.
2 years on
your N64. Seminal classic.
And the bad game is Night Trap, the Sega CD classic.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, there's lots of interesting stuff to talk about. About Night Trap, although it's all been said. You know what I'm saying? It is interesting. It is interesting if you've never heard about how Night Trap was at the center of like the, you know, the American government talking about family values and stuff. And they
save it for the pod.
Oh,
Mike.
I know. But
save
it for
the pod.
We will. But I mean, nope. Everybody knows about that. There's nothing.
Yes.
There's nothing new to say necessarily, except.
But we're going to say it anyways.
We will say it. The new thing. But you have to listen next week to find out what that one new thing is. The one
as
new
we frantically Google for 7 days.
Yeah. We'll come back next week for From Justin to Game.
Sweet. Bye.
Bye.